Hey gang, are you in the music industry here in Austin? You're looking for a way to navigate these tricky waters? Well, let me tell you about the Austin Music Foundation. The Austin Music Foundation is a nonprofit whose mission is to strengthen and connect Austin's music community with innovative programs that empower music professionals and Austin's creative economy. With expert panels, consultations, mentoring, and mixers, AMF's programs provide the necessary tools and opportunities to succeed in the Austin music industry. Simply go to austinmusicfoundation.org and get involved. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a fantastic show for you guys today. Singer-songwriter Tom Meaney is here. He's got a new EP out called Songs I Do. It's an acoustic EP, but it includes a duet called Higher Than the Moon with my friend Ali Tadros, who was on the show. He's friends with her as well. They do stuff together. He's had over 2 million views on YouTube. He has a singer-songwriter podcast, tons of videos of folks covering his songs. He plays out a lot. I heard about him through my friend Ray Prim. Great songwriter, but they're great pals. And Ray was like, hey, got to check out Tom. And then I heard Tom was a big fan of the show, listens to the show a lot. So that was nice. It was nice to hook up with him. And he sent me a CD of Songs I Do as soon as he finished it in October. And now I've got it in my hot little hands, and I'm going to play it. You can find out all about Tom, find out where to get his music and everything by going to TomMeaney.com. He's also on Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud. He's part of a songwriting group. He's always posting new songs. So go out to TomMeaney.com. Go to all the Facebooks, Twitters, and SoundClouds and find out what's going on with this dude. You'll like him a lot. He's a great guy. He's a great hang, and we had a great conversation. Before we get to that, let me tell you what's going on with me. Look, we've all been touched by the tragedy that happened in Paris on Friday. That was absolutely awful, an abhorrent act taken out on music fans and other Parisians and people just wandering the streets of Paris. Just an awful, awful thing. So my heart goes out to everyone in Paris. I know that we've got some listeners in Paris. I hope that you're all okay. I hope that your people are okay, families and friends and whatnot. I know that we'll all get through this. We do. That's what humans do. That's the human condition. We rise above whatever we've been challenged with. And That's about all I'm going to say. This isn't a political show or like a whiny show, but you know, this happened. This is something I spent driving to Houston on Saturday to play a gig. I was listening to it with my friend Paul on the radio all the way down there and all the way back. We just listened to NPR and listened to a lot of the live coverage, a lot of the interviews, and we were stunned and shocked. And that happens. You get together with people and you're like, wow, I can't believe this happened. What's going to happen now? We're going to rise above it. That's what human beings do. All right. So speaking of rising above it, tonight, November 17th, I will be playing a solo show at the Townsend right here in Austin. My good friend Jonas Wilson will be playing before me. He'll play at 8. I will play at 9. Please come on out. There is no cover for this particular show. So come on out and do it, man. Come on out and listen to the music. My man Jonas doesn't really do a lot of solo shows, so this is a chance to get to hear some of Jonas's tunes up close and personal. And the Townsend is a fantastic room. In fact, it just won the best bar. I can't remember what website, but it's best bar in Austin. It's going to win a lot more awards. It's been getting up there, getting a lot of accolades. Come on out, have a fantastic cocktail, watch the tunes, get involved, yell at me, heckle me. Let's do that. Let's not do that. I mean, not everyone, but if you got a good thing to say and you want to throw it out there and I'm going to laugh, do it. If I'm not going to laugh and you're just going to be yelling shit out, then don't do it, okay? So this is the Heckler Show. Speaking of Heckler Show, Friday night, Skyrocket played at Hanover's in Pflugerville. And I got up to sing a song. If you're just coming to the show and you don't know what Skyrocket is, Skyrocket is a band I'm in. It's a cover band. We do 70s and 80s tunes. It's a band of 7 people. And we all switch around. Everyone sings and switches instruments and does the whole thing. It's a very entertaining thing. And that is my job. So check it out. We're playing at Hanover's in Pflugerville, and there's a lot of bikers there now. Whenever we play up there, there's a lot of bikers. If you listen to the show, you know, when we played there last month, there was a stabbing after the show. Yeah, the bikers stabbed a guy outside. So that went down. So the bikers are a little intimidating. It's like 60 of them there. I'm not joking. They fill up the back porch. They give you that biker face when you walk back there. Like, who are you? What are you doing? What's the deal? And, you know, that's their trip. So this time I decided to work with it. My initial thing was to walk around just saying hi to all the bikers. So that did not go over as well as one would think. I was walking around going, hi, hey, hey, man, hey, buddy, how you doing? And that just, like, they were just like, what the fuck is your problem, dude? So I cooled it on that. And so the show goes on. Let me get to the show. Show goes on. I get up to sing a song. I'm singing, and this guy that's not a biker, kind of a good-looking guy, dressed kind of nice, comes kind of walking towards the stage, looking at me and flipping me off. Not in an angry way, like, fuck you, like a, fuck you, little guy. And he's kind of sinister. I don't know if he's as sinister as, like, maybe I started making him a Marvel villain or like a DC villain, like a weird comic book villain. I don't know why I went specific with genres. I don't know what the difference is. Like a comic book villain. Like he was kind of laughing and being playful, but flipping me off the whole time. Well, one of the bikers caught wind of it, man. Yeah. And when we got done with that set, I came walking off stage and I, you know, the biker guy was like, hey. And so I walked over. I said, hey, man, I'm Johnny. He said, hey, I'm Jeff. Why was that guy flipping you off? Do you know him? And I said, no, I don't. It was kind of weird, wasn't it? And he goes, yeah, that guy gives you any shit, you come get me. So guys, I'm in with the bikers over there at Hanover. So as long as this guy Jeff's there, maybe he can introduce me to the other guys. Now when I say hi and walk around like an asshole saying hi to all the biker guys at the Hanovers, they'll be saying hi back. I'll be like, hi. And they'll be like, hey. They probably won't sound like that, but they'll say it in their own way. So look, man, this is what happens. There's people that are different and they can be intimidating because biker guys are intimidating. Especially after, you know, that huge thing that happened at the Bikinis or the whatever, Hooters or whatever in Round Rock earlier this year. So check it out. I think I might be friends with those guys. So that's good. That's a way to do it because we're playing there next month and I'm sure those guys are going to be there. Anyway, then we drove to Houston the next day and played a show in Seabrook. My friend Paul and I drove down there. As I said, we went down there listening to the NPR stuff about Paris. Got up to play a show. It was a food and wine festival in Seabrook. It was called Celebration Seabrook. Well, by the time we were the last band, we went on at 7 at night. By the time we got there, it was cold, it was windy, and there was about 35 people. But they hung in there. As soon as we started playing, they moved up to the front of the stage, and they had a great time, and they were hanging out, taking pictures afterwards, talking to us, finding out where we're playing next, meeting little kids who enjoyed the show. So then Paul and I jumped in the car, drove right back to Austin because it finished at like 8:30. So we just drove down there and drove home. It was about 7 hours in the car, but a good time. You know, that's what we do. That's what we do. We play. You know, when you talk to people that like work at a place every day and you go like, oh, yeah, I went there, then I had to go there and do this. But that's what we do. That's my job, you know. I'm not partying. I'm not throwing a scene. I'm going out there. I'm working. I'm bringing entertainment to people and trying to make them happy. Much like my friend Tom Meaney, whose new EP, Songs Like I Do, is available now as we speak. Go to TomMeaney.com and find out all about him. Look, he's going to be playing. He's going to be doing shows everywhere. He's doing songwriter things. He's winning awards. He won the Kerrville Folk Festival for the Grassy Hill New Folk Competition. The Grassy Hill New Folk Competition, 2015 Kerrville Folk Festival winner. He's won a lot of competitions. He's got records out. You go to his SoundCloud, you can see the songs he's writing. He's putting them up all the time. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter. He's Tom Meaney. We had a great conversation. He's a great dude. So sit back and enjoy my conversation with the talented and very entertaining singer-songwriter, Mr. Tom Meaney. Let's get down.
Ready, my guitar is in tune. There's a chair and a tip jar, the corner of the room. That's where I pour my soul out.
No, it was just cheap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I got talked into it by my mom.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my brother and I lived together for a long time, and he has a daughter.
So yeah.
My mom just, I think she had envy of her friends. Apparently, one of her friends gave her child or children a down payment to get a house.
Oh.
And I think immediately my mom was like, well, okay, well, I got to do that. But so.
Oh, thank God for a friend.
Yeah. I got talked into it. But now I'm stuck in a house. But no, it's just cheaper.
A lot of music people live out there that I know.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't know anyone. I know Jack Burton and his wife live out there. I don't know if you know them or not, but he's in 10,000 bands. A lot of those Motown bands that play around town. Those are the only musicians I know out there.
Uh-huh. What happened to your heart?
Oh, I had a quadruple bypass.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty serious.
You're a young guy, man.
Yeah, I was 38. When I had it. So it's been 2 years.
What'd you do to it?
A lot of damage. A lot of barbacoa. And, you know, I don't know. There's, you know, the doctors were all very, very shocked, right? So when you have something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So most people are like, okay, this guy's huge. He's not taking care of himself. That's what it is. And that's a big part of it.
Like,
I've seen bigger people that didn't have quadruple.
Yeah.
But so every time, you know, when you're in the hospital for that long, you have, you know, teams of shifts of doctors, nurses, nurses' assistants, three or four people per shift that come in and check on you. And every single one of them for 8 days straight, you know, they look at the chart. 38. You're too young. You're too young to have this. So there is some level of, you know, your genes that are involved. But, you know, I am not lying to myself to say that I didn't have some part in this, you know, but just not doing what I was supposed to be doing. And I wasn't, you know, I did smoke for, I don't know, maybe 7 years. 6 or 7 years, but I had stopped for easily 7 years by the time that happened a couple of years ago. But just one day I just started having chest pain and thought it was heartburn.
Heartburn, yeah.
And then the pills didn't make it go away after about a week. And then one day I got up real quick. I was taking a nap after work or whatever. I got up real quick and kind of walked fast to my studio in the in the house. Then I came back and I laid back down and I realized, okay, now my chest hurts again. And it was after I kind of walked fast.
Fuck.
So then I realized this isn't heartburn. This is something that's coming on when I do some kind of manual, just when my heart rate raises. So
yeah.
Drove myself that day.
And they said, you got to do this now.
They said, you're not going anywhere. After about 8 hours in the ER and no one telling me that I had a heart attack, a nurse or a doctor comes in and says, hey, I'm Dr. So-and-so. I'm the admitting doctor. And I said, admitting? She goes, that just means I'm going to be here all night. And I go, well, I thought that meant you were admitting me. And she goes, they didn't tell you? I said, yeah, you had a heart attack. You're not going anywhere. You're going to have a procedure done in the morning. And then I thought that meant, so they go in through your leg to check your heart.
Yeah.
And with a camera. And if there's blockage, they can just use a stent and kind of open it up.
Right.
And like, well, you're going to have to stay here probably 4 or 5 hours after that so that your leg can heal where they go in, because they go directly into an artery. And then you'll leave. And so, but when they did mine, the guy was like, having a party when they came in, this team of doctors, they were in great spirits. They had music going on as they were doing this procedure. And I was feeling good about this, 'cause I was like, okay, they're in good mood. I'm going to be out of here in 4 hours. And then immediately the guy just got quiet. It's like the record, you know, when the scratch comes on a record after. Looks straight down at me and he's like, hey man.
I don't mean to laugh, but that's a really funny scenario.
I gotta turn my phone off. What did I do with it?
When was this?
This was in 2013.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, would you put the record out? Did the record do that to you?
Dude, you know what? It came out shortly before. But, you know, it really, that's funny because I had a huge show at Strange Brew. Mm-hmm. So we had our release, and it was, for me, huge because I grew up here. So all the people I went to high school with were very excited, and we did a Kickstarter. And so we damn near sold out one-to-one bar. I know that the fire marshal was in there, which was like, this is my very first show. Never played with a band before. My CD release is my very first show. Packed. So then a couple months go by, we got another show at Strange Brew, which is a favorite place of mine. And I had to cancel it 3 days before, man. It was a huge bummer. And it took me a year to get back into that place. But no, it was definitely a heartbreaker.
That's an interesting place, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I love it. And I'm friends with them. They've done ads, sponsored the show and stuff. And me and Casey had a band together. Mm-hmm. And we've been great friends for, 20 years. But it is, there's like a weird, not weird, but like a guard. Like, they don't fuck around. Like, they got their weekly shows, and there's like 8 other people that play there.
There is a definite rotation of regulars that
there's
I
there's nothing
get,
wrong with that. Know, that happens everywhere.
Awesome. Yeah, but you are right. It is very difficult just because so many people want to play
that's
there.
What it is, yeah. Is that it's the most popular place. It's won all these awards. Yep. And gotten all these accolades. And for people that do what a singer-songwriter kind of like something that you need to listen. It's a great listening room.
Right.
And it's kind of a cherished room to be in. It's not going to be a bunch of drunk people screaming shit. And,
The reputation is that place is known everywhere. So like I did Kerrville Folk Festival and everyone that I met there.
That's what they
when they
to
found
play.
Out that I have played Strange Brew or that I was about to play Strange Brew again. They all want in. I mean, it's the reputation is.
Yeah.
I mean, they're known everywhere.
I took over a weekly show there last year. I didn't turn the air conditioner off, dude.
Off?
Nope. Who cares, right?
No, I don't.
I'm turn
good.
It off.
I'm good.
That will be cool. I don't want you to get another heart attack.
I'll be good.
There it is. Now there's air in the room. Just know that Tom and I are getting cooled off by the sweet, sweet breeze coming out of that vent.
Yeah.
I had a weekly show there. And it's weird because I never thought of like an electric band going, but I've seen plenty of fucking loud ass bands mm-hmm. playing in there. It's mm-hmm. great. So yeah, they got it going on. This episode is brought to you by Strange Brew.
Yeah, hey Strange Brew, hey Scott. I play there with my band.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, primarily, my band is playing my singer-songwriter music with a band to it.
Still
but we
want
have
it
a
listening.
Few,
it's not like all of a sudden it's like dancing and guitar solos.
But we do have some guitar solos and we do rock a few, and it. But it still works very well in that room because, and I'm not one of these people that will chastise the crowd if they're talking. At first I was. My good friend, Ray, is number one at... He will make sure that you're not talking. And since I kind of came up under Ray's wing.
Really?
He kind of got me into
You're a protege of Ray.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Proto-Ray.
But since time has kind of passed on and I've had more experience, I realized that sometimes the things that I do directly influence whether the crowd is talking or the crowd is dead silent.
Have you learned the weird rules? Like make something seem like it's going wrong and then start dealing with it?
No, but I would love to learn any rules.
These are great things, man. My friend Kevin Hunter turned me on to this thing. I lost the crowd one night. He's a guy I used to write songs with. He came to see my band. And I lost the crowd. I just didn't. And there was something inside me that when they were lost, I was like, fine, fuck you, like in my mind, fine, fuck you, It's another person that doesn't care about me. It's just going to make me stronger, what I mean? And then he said, hey, you got to create a diversion. And you can get the crowd on your side by simply be playing and then, like, undo your guitar strap, make your guitar fall, and then catch it, and then, like, hold your guitar up and, like, try and fucking negotiate that and finish the song.
Wow.
And I was just like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And also, I'm going to go on record saying he's literally one of the worst performers of all time. But I didn't see him in his day. I saw him after his heyday. Oh, God, that was really I might have to take that out of here. But it's true, he's terrible. And,
right,
like,
right. Oh,
when he would come in from L.A. in my band, we were so in love with him and his music and stuff that we would be like, hey, come to our show and we'll do, like, 5 songs and back you up. And you'd be like, yeah. I swear to God, everybody would be like, God, don't ever let that guy on stage. It's terrible. But that advice that he gave me, I've used it and variations therein.
Like, I wonder why that is.
Oh, God damn it. And, like, I mean, it just creates this, it turns everything off center, and then everyone's watching you try and recover from it. And then you recover, and then they're like, yeah, dude, you see it? His guitar, dude, he finished the song. It's genius.
That's a hell of an idea.
Yeah. I did once tell someone to shut up, and then I had to talk to them after the show and work some stuff out outside without getting my ass kicked.
Right. Yeah, and I get it when you're playing intimate music, right? Where the whole purpose is to have a connection
with
somebody.
Well, if someone's talking at Strange Brew, they take care of that. Luckily,
that. They do.
I've seen people get the
But booth. I, you know, when I'm playing with the band there, I don't mind so much if people are talking.
I don't think they do either.
I think the people sitting mind. Yeah. That's so I kind of want people to police themselves. I
take
truly believe in audience not mob rule. I don't want somebody beating somebody up in the audience.
It's not anarchy,
hey man,
but
you know, if you want to listen to this
you're
show,
you're libertarian.
I guess you could say that. Yeah. But if you're paying $10, if I'm paying $10, and the guy next to me is singing during, you know, a singer songwriter or whatever,
that's ridiculous.
I need to say, or I need to go to the venue and say, hey, can you shut these people up? Or I need to just politely say, hey. Chill out, man. We're all listening here. The whole crowd is quiet, but you know.
Right.
So, but alcohol sometimes negates any of the rules.
I mean, they do have it lucky because there's no shot culture there. You know what I mean? No one's,
right.
No one's getting wasted I mean, if you get wasted at Strange Brew,
then
you're either
a
lightweight
problem.
Or you're like
you got a real problem.
Your teeth are probably purple from drinking like 18 glasses of red wine.
Right.
Hey, man, I wanted to tell you. Yeah, there's a whole page of videos of people just covering your tunes.
Yeah,
on your website, TomMeany.com.
That was
That's
was a heyday,
awesome.
You know, and I really love that people did that because I can't explain how cool that is when someone
I can't
covers
I think
your
it's
song.
The coolest thing I've seen in a long time.
And so it started happening. So I kind of came about from YouTube. Like I have a cool story for you that involves you that I'll tell you, but
I love stories that involve me.
YouTube, there was a time like 2006 where YouTube was like a huge thing for people to go on and do a cover song.
Yeah,
and
it's
people
still
were getting
is, isn't it?
It's
like
totally
some kid,
died
like,
down.
Look at
though.
This little kid singing.
That from time to time you'll see something like that, but at that time it was huge.
You're
right. Like.
You
would see cover songs, and they would have it in a day, in one day, thousands and thousands of hits or views. And so I started doing that, and
you started doing covers.
Covers. I started playing music again. I hadn't played really in years, and so I decided. I went off to school to play sports, and
what sport?
Football. I went to Texas Tech. I was a walk-on over there, and I didn't last very long, but the dream stuck with me. So I continued on and got back on the team after a year hiatus, and then decided after not doing so well in school to come to Southwest, come back home and go to Southwest, and then I was going to play there. So I had the dream stuck with me for many years.
What position did you play?
I went there to play defensive line, I'm pretty short when it comes to Division One standards.
Yeah.
But I was extremely strong, and I did well in high school, but they moved me to offensive guard, so that I could play demo defense against the starters.
Okay.
So with the promise that next year you'll be on defense.
Okay.
So I went to play sports and was in college and was off in Lubbock. And, I had my guitar.
Right.
And I would play old stuff, but I wasn't doing anything. You weren't doing new stuff.
Okay, so then you got re-inspired.
I got re-inspired.
And then started doing the YouTube covers. Name a couple covers you might have covered that I would like to hear.
Well, I did. The one that got me almost 1 million views was I did a Chris Brown cover.
Okay, that's cool.
Of With You.
Okay.
Which is, it almost sounds like a Michael Jackson song, but...
Okay.
I used Auto-Tune. The not the country Auto-Tune, but
No. Like the Bob, the Neo, one Bob Schneider uses.
Yeah,
the
robot Auto-Tune.
At
its highest level.
Right.
And the kids at the time, I can't remember the guy's name.
The
kids at the time just loved that. That was the thing in rap, right? It was
I'm on a boat.
Yeah, that I think.
The rapper guy that's on that.
So
is it T.I.? No.
Not T.I. Gosh, no. It's sad. I can't remember his name.
No.
I think it was before T.I.
He was one of my favorite guys, too, at the time. And I haven't seen him in a long time. No. Interesting you brought him up. Okay, so go ahead.
So I got like a free plugin.
Okay.
To my Mac. And I found the settings on somebody's, blog or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, the kids were searching for this Auto-Tune.
Just looking for stuff.
Looking
with
for anything
acoustic covers
regarding Auto-Tune, the guy's name, and then so they landed on my page, and 80% of it was kids just ripping me a new one.
Really,
80%. And
what were they saying?
We're talking about 2 million, like fat jokes, bald jokes, old jokes, some of the best.
We were just talking about that kind of culture of just like freely just slamming everything.
It's awful.
You know what's weird is like, how about showing up at those people's house and going, those shoes? What's wrong with you, jerk? That culture drives me nuts,
man. It does drive me nuts, but I will say this. Some of the best insults I've ever read. I mean, and me and my buddy make fun of this one. I laugh about it. Someone says, because I was playing it live.
You got a thick skin.
Yeah, I do.
You didn't go cry.
So I was playing it live. When I did these covers, I would record the video and the audio at the same time with one mic. So it's picking up my voice and my guitar.
Oh, it's doing the bleed up to the guitar too?
Right. When I had the Auto-Tune on, it would cause the guitar to sound like it was underwater.
Right.
What I did was record everything, the music first, and then I recorded myself on the video singing live into the mic. So I'm actually singing, but the guitar was already recorded. But I have the guitar in my hand because at the very end I play a little outro. So everyone was like, "Why has he even got the guitar?" I mean, that for them to be focused on.
So it's
got to
be kids because they're just stupid.
Yeah, because they wouldn't understand how that worked, but. One guy said, why is he holding that guitar? And another kid responded, because there's donuts in there. It just made me
That's
laugh.
Pretty fucking funny.
For days. I even put it, like, I made a video comprised of all the terrible jokes and comments just so people could see what it's like. But I only got those kind of comments on that song, like, something for the kid, a song that the kids would be looking at, right?
I feel like you're leading up to tell me a story where Ray is going to be like the Usher to your Justin Bieber. Like he's going to discover you on YouTube.
You know, that is actually how it happened. But I want to go back. I want to go back because I said that YouTube got me started. I know that is actually how it happened. But so there were three events and you were involved in one of them.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I forgot.
I'd stopped playing for a long time. And, when I was younger, I was a hair metal fan, like hair metal into high school. And, And I don't know what I was listening to when I went off to college, but I wasn't listening to singer-songwriter or folk or anything like that, for sure. But one day, and I don't remember if it was on the Austin Music Network or if it was on just the Access Channel, one of the Access Channels, you and Mark Addison and Will Sexton were playing a song swap.
Oh, yeah?
At, I don't remember where it was, but it was outdoors.
I'll tell you exactly where it was, man. And Scrappy.
No. It was just you three, I believe.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was the show where I was in love with Scrappy. I had a friend, my friend Anar used to call me and be that, say, because they would show individual videos from it. So when they'd show a Scrappy song just by itself
maybe
in the rotation,
Scrappy was
I was just sitting there staring at him like this. You'd be like, dude, that show where you're in love with Scrappy's on.
Okay,
so you saw that and you
so
were
I
like.
So I saw that and I was like, this is cool. I like this. I can do this. I can, because you guys were just playing acoustic song swaps. And it's funny now because I almost play 80% of my shows are some kind of song swap.
Yeah.
And I love them, right? But so I watched that every time it came on. And you remember how those channels worked. That was on
they would
all
show.
The
time.
But so that was
That's cool, man. Thank you.
That was a kind of a defining moment. And I remember running into Will Sexton and telling him the same story. But this was, I mean, so that was years ago. Like, because I remember I lived off of 35 and Old Torf at the time, and I ran into Will Sexton at the gas station. And I had just picked up his CD because it had a song that he sang
on the show.
On that show.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, so I told him the same story. So it's, you know, it's cool that...
You know, he's a great songwriter that you don't get to hear his songs as much anymore because he's not out there writing and performing as Addison.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking great.
I was blown away.
I wrote some great songs with Addison.
I was blown away by him. I did not know that he was in a band. Yeah. And then I later found from that same station that he was in a band with Nina.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name.
That's how they moved here from LA.
Right.
And it was Will who brought them here. Because
is that right?
They would come through on tour in the early 90s, and Will would call everyone and be like, hey, God, it's Tuesday, man. I know you're not doing anything. You got to come see my friends. So we'd go see them, and they just kind of started becoming friends with them. And then they liked it so much here and kind of the vibe, so they just moved here. And then they were like my neighbors, so that's how I got to know them.
Oh, man. So it's cool to hear the stories behind things that you remember when you're young.
Yeah.
So, I mean, or younger. But, yeah, man, so that was cool. It's cool that we get to have this chat.
Yeah. Well, that was it. I hope you had a good time. So you got, so Ray saw you on there?
So,
what did he write you and say, like, or was he one of the guys that insulted
you? No, he didn't send anything bad. He saw, one day I got a Facebook message from him, and so apparently he saw a video on Facebook that somebody shared of my song called Job.
Okay.
And basically that song is just me repeating over, I hate my job, I hate my job, I hate my job. But it's pretty. It sounds like a ballad almost. And so he shared that video, and then he hit me up and said, hey, man, I'm doing this regular thing over at Flipnotics. And he was having a regular song swap over there.
Yeah, that was a great thing.
And he asked me, Soul Writers.
Yeah, yeah.
And he asked me to open for them. And that's kind of how it started. And then, you know, the next time he brought me up during one of their sets, which is now as someone who plays shows, I know how much of a gamble that can be. You know, just in the middle of their set, their full band set, he brought me up to play my three acoustic ballads, right?
Wow,
and
nice.
And the fear is that everyone's gonna get up and walk out because you've changed the energy, but they stuck around, and then he came back on, and that was kind of how it all started for me.
He's really turned into such an industrious, like creatively industrious cat.
Yeah,
you know.
Well,
he's got his hand everywhere.
Yeah, and well, and that's actually very, very true because he's kind of the hub and has
hub of a lot of stuff. Yeah.
A lot of people know each other because of
Ray.
The Soul Writer shows. You play enough of these.
And that's just shit he created on his own. I mean, I remember when he was the lead singer of
Seven Stones.
Seven Stones.
Yeah.
I knew him then. It was a different, he was just a singer guy.
Right.
And he didn't really know how to make shit run. He got in a band with other dudes that kind of did stuff. And he really kind of invented what he does.
Right.
You know, he's created a community with that, with the songwriting game thing that he
does. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's another thing. I mean, if I want to pinpoint why I am doing the things that I'm doing today musically,
and you're doing really well, man. You've won tons and tons of these competitions, and I mean, you most recently won the. I wrote it down. Wait,
Kerrville.
I know, but let me read it. the Kerrville Grassy Hill Now Folk Competition.
New Folk Competition. Yeah. Kerrville is...
I mean, just recently.
Yeah.
Just
now. It was a couple months ago.
Yeah.
A few months ago. I went back a couple weeks ago and played their... so they have the main Kerrville Folk Festival, and then they have the... I think they call it mini folk, and it's the fall folk music festival, which is like a wine and music folk festival.
He talked about you on this show, and then I was like, wait, do you mean the comedian? But I was thinking,
oh, Kevin
Meaney.
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah. I remember that.
Very
now.
Few Meanies.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. He spells it different though, but very few Meanies in this country. But
You ever get real clever for Halloween and just paint yourself blue and be a blue meanie?
No.
No?
No, but I you
it's
know
a great idea.
I didn't even know about the blue meanies until, I don't know how, a few years ago, they played somewhere in town, like for South By or
no,
somewhere.
I mean like the blue meanies from the movie.
Oh, no, I thought you were talking about the band. I don't know, what are the blue meanies?
You see that blue guy up there on my speaker next to Ringo?
Yeah.
That's a blue meanie.
Oh, wow. So
from the
maybe
movie The Yellow Submarine.
Oh,
geez. That's the antagonists of the movie are the blue meanies.
So that's why that band is named the Blue Meanies.
Yeah,
man,
sure.
This tells you a little bit how I'm so
wow,
in
what
my
a weird,
own
yeah.
world. I do not have a huge musical encyclopedia.
But you
I
know
like
what?
Who I like, and it's in here.
I like that I'm in your encyclopedia. Maybe you haven't heard enough good music, and that's why I inspired you.
Oh, no, man. That was just, I'm telling you, because to this day, that's what I love to do, is to play.
The songwriter in the round?
Just, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in the round, but I prefer playing just with my guitar and vocal.
Sure.
I get way more, I get so much more of a connection, but also after the shows, it seems that it sparks conversation. Like people want to come up and say, hey, listen, I really liked that because of this. I went through this. Or when you know, I tell the
do
story
you feel
about
like
my
when
heart
you,
surgery.
When you do the
that.
Band, when you do the band, that it kind of, no insult to the band, but all of a sudden it's just the band playing. Like you can make what you do by yourself far more unique than when you bring in others.
Yeah, and that is a internal struggle that I have.
Because you like playing with the band.
I love
it's fun
playing
to do
with
that.
The band.
It's nice to have a drummer up there.
It's totally a different, it's 3D, right? I mean, to hear a pretty piano behind me and or a rockin' song with the drums and my guitar player who is ridiculously good.
Who is that?
His name's Michael Ingles. Okay. And he played with, one of the things he did was he played with Double Trouble. And he also played with Lisa Tingle, I believe, but for sure Trouble.
You mean like with
Post.
Right.
Yeah, like they went out on tour and he was the guitar player and singer.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. He's incredible. And he does his own thing. Bless you.
Sorry.
Salud.
My allergies are killing me.
Oh, and I get it. Everybody, man.
I've been Flonase-ing it, too.
Yeah.
Still, this is Flonase still sneezing.
Yeah.
It sucks being rough. A singer in this town, isn't it?
Oh, gosh. I was just telling a story on stage the other day about neti pots.
Yeah, yeah.
And how my fear is that one day I'll be in the middle of, like, my most sad song, and in the middle of it, in the bridge, my nose will just start leaking a gallon of water from the neti pot. But that's happened, but it's not happened during a set before. But
so why did those people cover your songs then?
Oh, going back. So
I think that was insulting.
Just kind of...
that's what they do.
That was kind of the thing at that time. Like between 2006 and 2008, if I released if I put a new song on YouTube, my own song, if I didn't get 1,000 views on the first day, I was bummed. That's just how big YouTube was for that kind of thing. Now it's totally changed.
Yeah.
Nobody's looking for that anymore. They're looking for funny stuff and political stuff and cops beating up people, that kind of stuff. But at that time, when I put out a new song, I would get about 1,000 for the first day.
And then somebody out there would think to cover it.
They, and not only that, but they would communicate with me. And that was a cool thing because I still talk to some of these people now. Some of them have joined my songwriting group from Canada.
What's your songwriting group?
The Soul Writers.
Oh.
So Ray started it, and then
I've been asking Ray about that. Because I think I just, you know, I don't know. Maybe I had a busy week the first of, and I was like, hey, man, sorry I didn't turn in a thing. And then like,
that's it. You're out. You're out, man. Once you are out for a week. But so I changed that, right? Because it's hard to do that for a whole year, a song a week. But the rules were once you're out until the next one. So I started it.
Okay.
16-week semester.
Oh, that's why you talk about the university.
Yes, Soulwriter University. Yeah,
what week are we in right now?
This is the second semester. I'm not in it this semester because I ran it last time and it was just a lot of work. But also I'm recording, I'm in the midst.
Yeah.
So.
By the way, that's a great acoustic album.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
By the way.
What a segue.
Also, your SoundCloud is huge and it's great.
Yeah, I don't put a lot of effort into the SoundCloud. I throw up songs that are like my weekly songwriter songs. Some of those will never see the light of day other than that. They're not keepers, but
sure, but then you're constantly updating it every week.
I update it if I'm in the group.
When you were in the group. Yeah.
But some of them were keepers, and so I like to have them up there, but I listen back sometimes. It's a two-way street. You know, I'll listen back to something I did in the group last year, and I'm like, I can't believe I even put this anywhere for people to hear it. But then I'll hear one that I didn't think was any good, and boom, I'm playing it in the set or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah. But that it's all because of that songwriting exercise. You know, I had heard about it because Bob Schneider and Casey started one. And for all I know, that was the first one.
That was the first one I ever knew of. You know, when they first started it, they wouldn't let me in.
Well, I couldn't get
in. It was weird. They were asking my wife to do visual stuff like to the titles. And I was like, I'd like to. And everyone was like, but I ended up doing it later.
Well, that's cool. Because I really wanted to get in because I heard that there's so many cool people. But I think
there's
I was thinking
of
it,
like Jason Mraz and shit do it. And,
but I was thinking more of as a fan.
I don't think you get to hear those songs. I think the famous dudes don't.
They're maybe in their own little secret thing. Yeah.
They don't. Because, I mean, like, at least from what I understand, my friends that have played with them, like, you have to sign, like, fucking...
like some kind of agreement not
non-disclosure, whatever. You can't ever say anything about him except that he's nice and... Can't say you saw him getting blown in a hallway. Not that anybody ever told me that. I'm just saying you can't say it.
Yeah, I really wanted in to that group. But now that I look back,
isn't that weird? Because you think that now there's other guys that are like, I gotta get in that Tom Meany group, man. They're keeping me out.
Well,
how do I get in that?
I would hope that people are doing that because we have people from people that just picked up a guitar last year.
Oh.
To people who are on tour, right? And so the people on tour are regularly giving advice in a Facebook group, which is
cool. Like, hey, you know what? This is a pretty good song.
You can
take this and do this.
And maybe not as much advice about your song in particular, but more this song structure because now they're doing more complicated stuff. Instead of a prompt, it's like, song structure A. You're going to write a song in this song structure this week, which is like verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, out. But then some of those song structures down the line are old school. And they're not, they're like, I can't remember what was the example. It's like a very famous, maybe it was Happy Birthday or something like that. But it's a song structure that is almost never used in modern time. But it's something. It's something to make your creative juices flow to write a song in that song structure. but it's totally different than the normal, hey, write, okay, the prompt this week is blueberry pudding. Now you got to write a song with blueberry pudding. That's one thing, but actual song structure and thinking about song structure is an important part of songwriting too. It's less organic, but then song groups in general aren't organic, really. You have a spark that's already given to you. Now build something
like
around
a task.
It.
Yeah. And you got to do it within this amount of time.
Right.
Or Ray Prim. Or you're out.
Or Ray will.
No matter how many times I have him on the show, we had him on the doing
the
his pizza
show.
Eggs with the cooking show.
That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool.
So what? He's not responding to your requests of.
I don't. I like that I vilified Ray Prim. He's the nicest guy.
Yeah, he's
and
a
just
great guy.
He really has really. I'm very proud of him. Is that weird to say?
No, it's.
I
not.
Mean,
I'm
watched
sure
him,
he'd be happy to hear that.
I've watched him, you know, grow into this sort of industry of creativity, and he also works a day job.
Yes,
you know.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Because that's, I mean, all we all do in some way. At this point, in some way, we all do. I'm in Skyrocket. That's a band.
Right.
But I didn't set out to be in a cover band singing Faith in front of fucking Bill Carter. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I by no means disparage this amazing job and opportunity that I've been given and that my friends and I have created for ourselves. We're very lucky. And it's cool, but everybody has some kind of job, you know. Charlie Sexton, yeah. You think he wants to? I mean, not I'm not saying, like I'm sure he's got some agenda that he wants to do with his music, not necessarily constantly on tour with Bob Dylan, which is great. But that's his, you know, that's his job.
It's a job,
too. Yeah.
But it's a job in music, right? So
that's
I mean,
true.
But I'm glad that you brought that up because I was telling you how. About my job when I showed up here.
Right, hold on, but just one more thing.
Yeah.
You also have to remember, some people don't have any other skills.
That's true.
Like, there are times when I would like to go do something
right.
that I find interesting, like be a political consultant,
right.
be a campaign manager or something.
Right.
I have
but,
no
so
skills.
So you've been doing this since...
This is what I
forever,
do.
Forever.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I took, you know, I painted houses when things got rough in the early 2000s. But otherwise, man, I've just played music. And Skyrocket, basically, I mean, if I was just making my own records and doing my own, I would have to have some kind of job
right.
to make a living.
Right. I mean, so that's something that I've been thinking a lot about because I have, I've had some really cool moments. You know, I played with my hero. Like, I played a song for my hero.
Me?
Other than you.
And, no, sorry. Who's your hero?
A guy, Glenn Hansard.
Okay.
I've got
I saw
to,
his name on your thing.
He's in Europe. He's huge, right? And here he's pretty big because he won an Oscar for a movie called Once. He wrote the music and was the star of a movie called Once.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. My cousin Eric likes that movie.
He is my number one songwriter, Irish guy. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I had met him a couple times, and then. He came into town a few weeks ago, and I knew he was coming in, but he was playing a private show. So I sent him an email saying, hey, I'm not going to be able to get tickets, but if you can get me in, I'd love to see you. So he got me in, and then he pulled me up and had me play one of my songs for him. And that was a huge moment for me. And I felt like a rock star because, you know, after the show, everyone's coming up to me. Hey, what is the name of that song? Where do we find you? Where do you play?
Yeah.
Walk down the street, people are saying the same thing. Going to the place, I think it was Z Tejas, was eating with my buddy, and people were coming up that were at the show saying, hey, great job. So I'm on a high.
Yeah.
And then, boom, my phone vibrates, and I look at it, and it's a work email, and immediately brought me back down to size. Like, this isn't.
We need those TPS reports.
Something like that, you know? And it was like, okay, this isn't. This rock star thing that you just did, this isn't real life. This is real life. So get back down to size, right? So I've had this struggle internally about having a day job. But then, you know, I found out, and I think it's okay to say because I believe she mentioned this on her Facebook, but Gina Chavez had a day job at least as of a few months ago. But now I know she's all over, so she may not be doing that anymore.
Oh, yeah. No, she did.
Kalu,
no,
I was listening to your
Kalu,
podcast,
and
he drives for Uber, which I did for a long time. So I felt good to hear that these people that I admire.
Kalu drives for Uber.
Yeah.
I need to get him and come pick me up.
When you were talking about him bringing some Indian food or something home, and
oh yeah.
But so, you know, I guess you're not supposed to mention that you have a day job, because I think some people don't take you seriously if that's the case. But then I hear, you know, songwriter Austin Musician of the Year has a day job. Kalu, who is fantastic, has a day job, you know. So I feel better about it now. I definitely feel better. But for the reality of it, for me, I'm going to have a day job. That's just the way it is, you know, especially with heart issues. And I mean, if I didn't have the day job,
you wouldn't have insurance.
Yeah. I mean, you see a bill for $384,000.
Jesus fucking Christ. Are you kidding me?
Well, you know, that's what.
Sorry, that was a horrible expression. Jesus fucking Christ. I keep that one off the air.
That was what the hospital billed the insurance, but then the insurance comes back and says, okay, right, we'll pay $118,000 of this, right? But still, we're talking about $118,000.
I mean, yeah.
You know, so Jesus. I need a day job. But unless something crazy happens and I hit the lottery, I have to have a day job.
But like how, to me, there are people getting deals, a wild child and residual kid really held out for a long time and got like the right deal for their thing. But I'm sure people, I mean, you still got to go out and play gigs. You still got to go work to make money. I think that whatever sort of like Tony Scalzo from Fastball, who wrote The Way, might have been one of the last guys
right
to ride that gravy train,
right,
where you just sit back and things are coming in, and you choose when you want to do stuff because your income is taken care of from this song. But it's not doing it. I mean, even that song and just like those revenues from that stuff has dropped so immensely right for people that it's very difficult.
Well, I think really if you pinpoint it, the only people that are really making money that way are country. I think country.
I don't know.
Nashville,
dude.
Like,
yeah,
as far as the songwriting, selling songs, right? It's not there. You don't hear of that. And also
you sell songs like that, you get a publishing deal and you get an advance that you can live on from that and all that stuff. It's just a lot different. And I don't think that I know what you're talking about. And I remember, when in like the late 80s and early 90s when I was playing in bands that were relatively popular and I had a day job at Whole Foods, and I was just like, it was like the sort of like, that's one of the milestones when you go up to your guy and you go like, okay, I can't do this anymore because this the dream is alive.
Right.
And that shit happens, but shit, you know, 10 years later, you're painting houses.
Right.
Campbell and David Halley, you know, great songwriters. You're sitting alongside of them on this crew of dudes painting a house. Weren't you in Rolling Stone like 4 years ago? They were reviewing your record?
And for me, it just, because I haven't reached a level of success to really feel like, wow, you know, why do I have to work this day job? I mean, don't these people know who I am? I haven't reached that kind of audience, but I sure would love to be able to experience what it's like to have all day, every day, to be creating and working on my craft, if you want to call it that. But, you know, it is what it is.
You just masturbate twice more a day, two times more a day.
You're probably right.
You would all of a sudden become familiar with the people's court. And
well, I work from home.
And you would take, oh, you do? Okay.
That's funny.
All right. So you, maybe you'd write more songs. Or maybe you'd go for more walks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean.
Yeah. It's, you know, touring is kind of my main thing. Like, I feel like.
Do you get
I
out?
I want to get out.
You get
I want
to
get out.
At all? Do you go to Houston at all, or Dallas, or San
Houston.
Antonio?
San Marcos? I have played San Antonio. And the funny thing is, it seems like when I leave Austin is when I have a little bit more. The shows seem to pay more, and I get more longtime fans or followers from those shows. Here,
there's a lot of taking for granted just by nature here.
Right.
And I think that's always been. I don't think that's, you know, I mean, in the 90s, in the heyday of everything, I played a lot of shows to nobody. You know what
See,
I mean?
See, I missed those.
But I mean, it was not that different than today,
really?
Except for that a club could afford to bring you back every week but to play to nobody because the rent
like there
was cheaper.
A scene though, like you guys would all hang There's out at some place. But I and There's maybe I'm scene. In the wrong.
But
like,
you're
I'm not.
Not
going to the right There's, places. I guess.
Tom, there's somebody out there going like, how do I hang out with like Tom and Ray in their scene? You got a scene. It just doesn't seem like it because you're inside of it. It's yeah, not like in the 90s true. Everyone was sitting around going like, isn't this amazing, the scene we've created? It's like not until later on when you look back and you go, oh shit, that was a thing.
Right.
That was pretty cool.
But are there places where people are hanging out, where
sure.
all these people are hanging out at the same time? That's what I feel like I missed. I feel
First
like
all,
it was kind
of
like a... You know how the comedians in New York,
yeah,
and
they're
all
the
had their own thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that was kind of going on in the 90s when I was off trying to be a football player.
Right.
I was missing this scene where people were at Steamboat and
right.
Black Cat and all that good stuff or wherever. But that's what I romantic, like I want that to happen now, but... Is it?
But
am
it
I,
does.
Is it because I'm it older is. Than the crowd that's doing
that's
it?
That's definitely true
yeah.
because you have more in your life. You know, as you get older, you don't have that time like fucking off.
Right.
Basically, you
right.
know, like where you just go and you know. It's funny. I was talking to my girlfriend yesterday because we went to the Pecan Street Festival. I was like, it's so funny. You know, I used to have this sort of like life in my 20s where like I didn't like I left home at 11 at night, came home at like 5:30 or 6
right.
in the morning, would hang out after places closed, shooting the shit with dudes, just doing this, you know?
Right.
And I don't do that anymore, but it's still going on. I'm just like, I don't fucking stay anywhere until 5
right.
in the
no,
morning.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I hear you.
I'd rather just have someone come over during the day and talk to me.
Right.
I think we get older. I think that sometimes what happens is, like, your priorities change, your life changes, you move to Buda. You know what I mean? It's not like you're... I mean, fuck, I live walking distance from everywhere that you would go.
Right.
And I rarely go down there.
Right.
I mean, not as often as I think I should. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, I don't know. There's always a scene. And you guys do have a scene. Like, you have a scene. You have people submitting songs to you every week.
That's true. That's
and,
true.
Yeah.
I want a scene where people are showing up to shows regularly. Not just me, though. Not just me. I'm not talking about...
Yeah, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's just
it's
always going to be hit
though.
And miss.
I go out and I know these... I go out
say,
on a Tuesday and I'll see six world-class musicians on the stage and there's five people in the crowd.
I played many shows like that in the heyday.
Right.
I still, you know... I still played to no one in the 90s and did stuff like that. You just, it's always happening. Like you go every Monday to see Bob or something.
Right.
And you'll think something completely different. You'll be like, man, this place, even on Monday, places are packed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just a matter of your perspective. And you know, sometimes you're going to do shows like one-to-one where everybody shows up. Sometimes you're going to do ones at one-to-one where like, you know.
Oh, I've...
Baby C won't even come
right.
to see Ray play.
She doesn't.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Believe me, we've done a long song swap residency. And, it, you know, it's hard to get people out on a Monday, especially during football season. You cannot
Dude,
get people out on
I
a
did
Monday
a run night. Last year at the Strange Brew.
Mm.
And every week I would post a thing. There'd be like 80 people saying they're coming on Facebook.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The invite. 80 people.
Yeah.
Okay, well, one time, there was about 45 people. The rest of the time, there was about 10 people.
Yeah, yeah.
Twice, there was a lot of people.
Right.
And then one time, I got to open for Steve Pultz, and there was a lot of people.
Yeah.
But otherwise, there was like 10 people at those shows.
Right. I get it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I don't get to go to every show
no.
that I would like to go to, but I definitely get it. With... How fast technology is in your
yeah.
face and how quickly I can access a movie online that's in a full movie downloads in 5 minutes or something like that. So
you can
get,
see a classic Rolling Stones concert.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
You can. There's so much stuff going on. It's just a matter of sort of like... And the thing is you learn how to... up your game because that's
right.
the only choice we have. We don't have, there's no way anything's going to go back. We got to find new ways to seem interesting to
right.
people.
Well, I mean, and I think when I hear people complain about that, and I try not to complain. Sometimes I'll bring it up, like, this is something that bothers me, that I wish more people were at shows, not just my own, but my friends that I see. I try not to complain, and when I hear other artists complain about things like not selling CDs or whatever, half of me says your songs have to be better. So when I say that, then I realize, okay, anytime I feel this,
what about me?
My songs need to be better. Something needs to be better.
See, then you're definitely, to me, and one of the things that I've learned a lot from doing this show and talking to people about this very thing, the one thing that people, why are these people coming to my show? There's something wrong with them. It's like, hey, the smart guys and the guys that do well are the guys that go like, what can I do different to make them want to come?
Right. I mean, I don't want to.
It's a little thing.
I don't
want to
change the songs.
No.
To cater, but what is it? Is it something? Well, do I need to look more like a rock star? Or do I need to look more? Which is, yes, my appearance needs to be, you know, except for John Popper back in the day, right? With Blues Traveler, most people want to look at someone who is.
It's not true. Look at Meatloaf. The guy sold. Like,
that's true, but I mean the exception
records.
To the rules. But I mean, so
no, but you know,
that's
what?
One thing.
He realized what he had to work with, just like Lady Gaga. Fucking look at her, dude. That is not the most. That's
well,
not
she's
someone
turning,
that's going to be on the cover of Vogue. But
she's
takes
morphing.
What she has.
She's morphing,
and
though.
She works. She uses what she has and goes with that, and wears meat dresses.
Right.
You know what
that's
I mean?
True.
Like, you know, maybe I'm not like Taylor Swift looking.
Right.
You know?
But those are
maybe
things
my
that
jam
I have...
is I should wear meat dresses. And it's just, I mean, as weird as that sounds, it's like these are the things that I can do to make myself more unique.
Right, right. I'm thinking about which meats would I get?
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't want to do chicken because there would be some sickness involved with that.
Yeah, but that, you know, that's something that I have control over, and that's one thing. And you know, the my lack of experience with a live band. We've played a lot over the last year, but still nothing, right? So I'm very green, you know. In between songs, maybe there's a little bit too much dead space as I'm tuning, you know, those kind of things. So those are things that I need to work on.
Yeah.
And I realize that, you know, and I, when I go to a show and see a band that I think is incredible, I pick up on that. Like,
that's
okay. He's got two guitars.
Yeah.
I need to once tune to open D.
So I don't have to put the people through.
Right. Right.
Cause nobody paid $5 to watch you fucking get your thing from regular tuning to,
right.
Like, those are things, that's professional thinking.
Right.
Like, you're like, okay, you think about not yourself and your own thing. You're like, how can I give these people something to want to come back for more?
Right.
To stay, go get more involved on the internet.
Right. I
think you're on the right track, Tom.
Well, I hope so, and I appreciate you saying that. I think about it all the time, that's for sure.
Do you at all promote your the Singer-Songwriter Podcast? Which, by the way, is it thesingersongwriterpodcast.com?
Yes, thesingersongwriterpodcast.com.
You got a pretty, you got a serious address there.
Yeah.
I bet there's a lot of people looking for that.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
So what was your goal when you started that out?
Because
you don't put out a lot of episodes.
No, and I want to, and I even talk almost every episode. I'm
like,
I want to do this more often, and I want to have.
You're like, I didn't do this in a long time. Sorry.
Every week, I want to start over from scratch. But my goal was just to kind of chronicle what I'm doing. Meaning, you know, I'm 40 years old, but I just started playing music live 4 or 5 years ago. So I wanted to kind of have something to for people that are in my situation or people that are even younger that want to know, because, you know, living in Austin or right outside of Austin, That word Austin means a lot to people that are not here. That, you know, they have this preconception. They have this idea of what it is, and I want to say, okay, well, I live here, and this is how you have to do things. This is how you book, and this is how hard it is to book, and this is the contest that I'm entering, and you should consider entering this contest too.
That's another thing. You have the balls to to enter these contests, and you end up. There's a band called January May. You know those guys? Mm-mm. They're kind of new to town. Really fantastic. Man, they've gotten all kinds of stuff by just doing that. It's funny because I just always, whenever I see a contest, I just don't do it.
Half of me hates it. Half of me loves it. And I've learned a lot. Like, there's certain things you stay away from. There's certain things that are legit. A lot of them are money-making.
Maybe that's the thing, is that I can't see that. I've seen so many.
Well, yeah.
Hey, give us $50 yes. and we'll tell you if you're good.
You're like, right. Fuck you. And how and it's good. So part of, you and I both know that music is subjective. And
totally subjective.
So whenever
except
it's a
for
contest,
the people that really suck.
Well, true. You know, true. True. But if it's, the Kerrville Folk Festival, one of the main parts of the Kerrville Folk Festival, and it's been around for 40 years, one of the main parts, if not the biggest part of the Kerrville Folk Festival, is the New Folk competition.
Yeah.
And so that's legit. I knew that it was legit, even though 2 years ago, if you'd asked me, hey, you want to go to the Kerrville Folk Festival, I said, no, man, I'm not a hippie.
I've never gone to that,
because like
that's exactly
camp.
What I was saying. I like the
AC.
Camp.
Yeah. I like to be clean. But now that I've done it, I want to go every year, because those people
got some soul.
They got soul, man.
And they care about it.
They care deeply, and they want you to do well. And when they hear you, and if they like you, they follow you around. And they come to shows, and I've gotten house concerts because of it. And this house concert thing is a whole other, that's my new thing.
Yeah, it seems that's been like a great thing for singing.
Because you got a built-in crowd that is there to see music. They may not be there to see you because they may not know you. It may be a bigger house concert.
But they're
where it's
at
just
least
a,
they're there to hear new music.
They're there
that's
to
another
listen
thing,
and connect.
Know?
Right. That's I dig that the most. And that's why I was saying I really have kind of honed in on the acoustic performances, because I seem to get more out of it personally.
Yeah. And you can get your message across clearly.
Right.
And like you said, you haven't mastered the being a band leader.
It's rough. It's
it
hard
rough,
to do.
Man.
I opened up, my band opened up for Mingo Fish Trap last week. They are.
Who is that Mingo Fish? Like, I've seen their name for a long
they
time.
They have been around
somebody
forever.
Somebody wrote me a thing and was like, you need to get Mingo Fish Trap. And
they've been
like,
around forever. It's Roger Blevins Jr. is the leader of the band. They all went to North Texas, so they're all music. Like world-class musicians. But the band is like a mixture of Mississippi, Louisiana kind of soul with a little bit of funk. They've got a horn section. But the point is, it is a professional production when you see them. It's an hour and a half, 2 hours of you're compelled to dance because that's what the music is making you do. They're completely tall, tight and solid, not a flub.
No dead air.
There's a light show, no dead air. He knows how to talk to you in between songs. He's got great banter. Songs lead into other songs. So we opened up for them, which was huge for me because I knew there was going to be a huge crowd there. But also to get to watch him do his thing. And he's a friend of mine now because he's been in the group, the songwriter group, and we've done some acoustic stuff together. But so I learned from that kind of stuff, man. I don't know that I could do that. I don't know necessarily that that's my biggest, talent. Like, I think that I'm more settled in when I'm just sitting in a chair or standing up with my guitar. And, sometimes I have people sing harmonies or whatever, but for me, I get the best feeling doing that. I mean, I still feel good after full band shows. People come up after those shows too, but
there's just something. It's clearer, probably. You're getting your message across.
There's space and ambiance. So there's some. It's not just the music. It's almost the venue. The fact that you're playing in a venue that has that kind of music,
right?
that also has something to do with it too.
It's conducive people are seated to that energy.
Yeah.
It's probably too, like, you're new and that still, because there's things that happen, like when I do a lot of solo acoustic shows, I start to freak out because I can't go anywhere
right.
dynamically anymore. Like I can only get as quiet as possible and as loud as my acoustic guitar mm-hmm. and voice can go. I don't have a pedal board and
right.
fucking amplifiers and a drummer and like this kind of thing. But I bet over time you'll start, or unless you just keep on finding new ways. Do you do anything?
Samples and loops? I have yeah. one.
You have one?
It's hard.
It is hard.
That
and
is
it's
a...
hard to find people that... Have you ever seen Steve Poltz?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, I saw Damien Rice a month ago with loopers, and it was the greatest show I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
And it was just him. And I wasn't necessarily a huge Damien Rice fan. I like some of his songs.
Sure.
But I was there just because...
See what it's like.
I wanted to see what it was like. But I don't even think the people that are Damien Rice fans expected that. But it was the greatest performance I've ever seen.
Wow.
Greatest performance. I've seen a lot of shows, and that one was... I mean, it was like a... You know, he just... So, on the stage was instruments. So, he comes out by himself, and I'm like, okay, cool. He's going to play 4 or 5 songs solo, and then his band's going to walk out. That never happened. Just randomly, throughout the show, he would just start looping, and then I would... There was one pedal that was like a sub-bass. It wasn't like he had to kick it every time, but he would hit it, and it would just trigger something. But... Yeah. Then the lights behind him and smoke, and it was like he was playing in the middle of Baghdad during a bombing or something like that. But it was really an incredible experience. So I'd like to learn the looper just to have a little bit of freedom to solo over some stuff and extend songs. But that's a whole, it's like learning algebra. I mean, you got to be really on it to get it in time.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen some people do it where it's horrible. Where it's like 3.5 minutes before they start singing the first verse, and you're like, "I'm already out of, I'm already almost." You got 15 seconds left of this song for me,
right? Right.
So, yeah,
yeah. You have to have done it in your bedroom for a long time before you bring that out on stage. That's for sure.
Same thing with sex. You have to have done it a long time in your bedroom by yourself for a long time before you go inflict other people with your work.
I agree.
People can find you at TomMeany.com. Let's talk about this acoustic album. It's going to come out some point in October.
Yeah, because I play these shows, and I wanted to have something that represents that type of performance
sure.
for so that whenever you see me at like a Kerrville, you don't have to buy you. I mean, I'd like you to buy my fully produced CD,
of course. But I've had the same thing, like, oh, you know, I saw you play Soul Guns. I bought your thing, and it was like this rock record.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I read this book of this girl who does house concerts, and she had all this great. Advice, and that was one of the things. Have something for sale that is like the performance that you just did. So,
and it's acoustic stuff, and with the prolific as you are, you can make these all the time.
Well,
or at least release stuff
you
all
can.
The time. Have new stuff and have people keep their interest, because really that's what you have to do now. It's
right.
not it's not a matter of making your record for 1.5 years and then going out on tour for however long to
right.
support that record. It's like releasing shit as often as you can,
and
because life now is all defined by a newsfeed.
Right.
And if you're not in that newsfeed for 6 months, you might as well not even be here.
You're right. But in the fact that
it is
simple to record an album like this. And I did it in a professional studio.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And I actually did it in a couple studios. One was Ray's Ghetto Lounge, but I also did it at Wonderland Studios, which is where I recorded
the CD.
But so it was me and the guitar at the main studio. And then we did harmonies over at Ray's, just in the interest of time and scheduling. But
sure.
I'm very happy with how it sounds, because it does sound like what a show would sound like if you saw me acoustic.
Yeah.
At
it's really good.
Strange Brew or whatever, you know.
It's got real organic feeling and dynamics, and just
yeah,
you're a great songwriter, Tom.
Thank you so much.
People can find out all about you at TomMeany.com. You are on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Instagram. You've got so many little buttons you can go to in the social media aspect. You got
like
that going
that.
On. I don't either.
It's there, but I don't like it. Yeah. I wish, if it were up to me, everybody just comes to one place. But yeah.
Well, look, thank you so much for doing the show. Is there anything that I'm missing?
I just want to say that Jamie Harris and Ray Prim and Ali Tadros are on this CD.
Oh, yeah. Of course. And you have the song that you did with Ali Tadros, who is going to be in the next few weeks this show comes out.
That's
with her.
Right.
She was just on it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm a huge fan of all those people, and they're all kind of heroes of mine. So I'm really lucky to have them on the CD. And you can come find me and get it. I'm not going to release it for a while, but I will have hard copies. I did it just to have stuff for these house concerts that I'm doing, but I am going to release it within the next month on all the iTunes and all that good stuff. But I think that's it. Oh, Dripping. I don't know when this thing's coming out, but if it does come out.
I don't either, but it's not until late in October, though.
Dripping Springs Songwriters Festival. If you happen to be doing nothing between the 16th and 18th of October, if this comes out before then.
I don't think so. Sorry.
Then disregard that. I didn't say that.
I'm sorry. I'm backed up.
I get it, man.
Tried to get a lot of stuff done so that I can spend time writing songs. Because I spend all day doing this. The last thing I want to do is write a song afterwards.
Well, I get it. And I'm a fan of this show, man. I've listened to several episodes.
Thank you.
I like the way that I like the conversational style, and I like that you talk, you kind of intro things and just let everyone know what you're doing before the podcast actually gets into the interview. So,
thank you.
The next
guest on the show is going to tell me that they hate that part of the show. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thank you.
I spit out words they'll never hear.
Tom Meaney, fantastic artist, great dude. Find out more about him at TomMeaney.com. His acoustic EP should be out now. Go out there and check it out. Look it up. He's on Facebook, Twitter, and his SoundCloud. He's always updating it with new songs that he's writing. So get out there and find it. Find out more about Tom Meaney. Don't forget, when you're out there on his Facebook page, you can go to our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? And like that, get updates on the show. See pictures of guests like me and Tom Meaney hanging out in my kitchen. And also, don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or favorite on Stitcher. You will get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday, okay? Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Tom Meaney for coming by. Let's hear some more music from his new acoustic EP, which should be out now. Tom Meaney, let's get down.
Coach at North Texas once gave me a call. Free education just to play ball. Hurt my knee in the playoffs, I'd be out to the fall. The coach at North Texas stopped taking my calls. So I took a class and I learned computers. Landed a job, help desk troubleshooter. No, it didn't pay much, but I was a trooper. If I worked real hard, I'd have a bright future. A recruiter at Google once gave me a call. I'd have a career with stock options and all. There was one other candidate, degrees on his wall. The recruiter at Google stopped taking my calls. So I packed my bags and I packed my acoustic. Then I moved to a town that is known for live music. Learned a cover or two so I know how to do it. Now I write my own songs, there's nothing to it. Thank you. Capitol Records once gave me a call. I thought I'd made it, but the deal fell apart. Now there's holes in the bedroom wall, holes in the hall, 'cause Capitol Records stopped taking my calls. Oh, Capitol Records, they once gave me a call.